Well, in discussing Balaam, it's somewhat of a prophetic topic, and next week we'll be talking about prophecy. So we'll be talking about, for me on the seminar on Sunday, we'll be talking about the two witnesses, the man of sin, and the temple. So when I'm done, you'll definitively know the answers to each of those questions. Okay, so we ask the blessing on the study, so we'll go ahead and get started. As I said in the last Bible study, we talked about Balaam, and we began discussing his story. We did not finish it, but we will finish it today in Balaam Part 2. As you think about Balaam, most people think it's a neat story and just one of the incidents of Israel's travels. But as you look at Numbers, there are quite a few chapters that deal with Balaam and deal with Balaam's prophecies that God inspired. And he's mentioned throughout the Scriptures, so it's not some minor or significant issue. Balaam's story has, as we'll see, has some parallels to our own time and our own experience. In fact, there are certain lessons that we can learn from Balaam and the things that he went through that are most applicable to us. And Balaam followed a dangerous path. Balaam's path is not the path that we want to follow. So let's look at Numbers chapter 22. We're going to look at Numbers chapter 22 and look at the major lessons there. And as you think about Israel, in Numbers chapter 22, you might turn there, and because we will get into it here in a minute, we'll just hold your finger in Numbers 22. But actually, we're going to hold your finger in Numbers 22, and we're going to start in Psalm 37, because it relates to Balaam. Psalm 37. I know that. As you look at Israel, Israel had wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, and they came up east of the Jordan. They bypassed Edom, which was further to the south below the Dead Sea. They bypassed them going eastward. They avoided Ammon and they avoided Moab because God said, you're not to get involved with them and get into conflict with them. You are to stay away from them. So they avoided them. So Israel came up as God led them, and God led them to the plains of Moab, right across from the city of Jericho. So he led them there, and here, as the people of Moab, they're just south of this, and here are 2 or 3 million people showing up on your doorstep, and they felt threatened. They felt very threatened. But Israel is on the brink of going into the land of promise. And as you think about the condition of the people of Israel, that's our condition. Because if you look at world events and everything that's taking place now in the world is not going in the right direction. The world in many ways is disintegrating. And it is... How much longer do we have? I can't say. But the trend is not good. So I would say, you know, by analogy, we are on the brink of the promised land as well. We have come, you know, we've been wandering a long time in the wilderness, and here we are on the brink of going into the land of promise. And, you know, God has led us, we're here, and so in that sense, we're very much like the people of Israel, on the brink of going into the kingdom of God and our eternal inheritance. Let's look at, as we think about this, let's look at Psalm 37. Let's begin in verse 29. Psalm 37, verse 29. Now, this doesn't directly mention Balaam, but what it does is it gives us some insight into Balaam and some things that are important to us. In verse 29, it says, the righteous shall inherit the land and dwell in it forever. So Israel was God's called out people. And they weren't righteous, but they were God's people, and they were seeking to live God's way. As far as people on the earth, they were doing the best of anybody on the planet at that time. And they were to inherit the land. But it's talking to the righteous. He's talking directly to you and me, telling us that we shall inherit the land and dwell in it forever. Let's go down to verse 34. It says, "Wait on the Lord and keep His way, and He shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it." And he tells us one of the challenges that we face as Christians is waiting on the Lord and keeping His way. Because, you know, one of the things that you have to, you know, as you walk in this way of life, there are times when it gets old. There are times when you get tired. And the Bible tells you, don't become weary in well-doing. And, you know, when you were young and full of energy and all of this, it was easy to be zealous. But when you're, I don't want any grief over this, when you're a little older and you don't have the same energy level, and it's easy to just say, you know what, I'm shot. You know, when I try to do my Bible study in the morning, because when I go home after working at my place of employment, I'm tired. So, you know, you work from 6 to 8, you get up at 4:30, go to work, you're there at 6, you finish up, and yes, you're just standing there, and yes, you're just pressing buttons, but by the end of the day, I'm tired. So if I'm sitting there, I tend to fade. You know, so, you know, I'm out, and wake up, you're missing the program. You know, so anyway, somebody tells me that regularly, just go to bed. You know, so anyway, I hear that. But anyway, we're to wait on God. And we have to hang in there. We have to wait on Him, trusting that what God has promised is going to be fulfilled. And it is. And he says, He shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. And the wicked will be cut off. We don't want to see anything negative happen to them, but we know that there are wicked people in this world, and God's going to say, enough. That's enough of that. And eventually He's going to cut them off. Verse 35, I have seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like a native green tree. They seem to be prospering. They do well. They're like a tree growing ever larger and spreading out. Yet he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Indeed, I sought him, but he could not be found. And you look at the wicked. You know, you can look at Goliath. Goliath was the wicked. And Goliath was directly attacking God. Had no respect for God. And he fell, boom, down he went, and his head was cut off. And he was no more. Verse 37, mark the blameless man and observe the upright, for the future of that man is peace. But the transgressors shall be destroyed together. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord will help him and deliver him. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them, because they trust in him. Now, Balaam was wicked. Balaam was a wicked man. And Balaam basically was looking for wealth and prestige. And if cursing Israel accomplished that, that was okay by him. He didn't care for Israel. He didn't really care for God, as we'll see. But it says that God is aware of what this individual is doing. And Balaam was a big individual, an important individual in his time. And God says he's going to fall. He is going to fall in time. And God's people will be exalted. Balaam would be one of the wicked that's mentioned in this particular psalm. And Balaam is the kind of person that God stood against as an adversary, as we'll see. With that stage set, let's go back and just recall a few things from last time. As I said, Balak and the people of Moab were terrified when Israel came into their land. They saw Israel destroy the people that they were subject to, Sihon and Og. They wiped them out, and they were free. of their oppressors at that point. But they had not been attacked, and they, because they had been oppressed, were not able to mount a military challenge to Israel, which they gladly would have if they had had the military. So their military was diminished. But what their goal was to call this curser down from up around Haran, ask him to come down, curse Israel, and then Israel would be weakened, they hoped, and then they could maybe mount a military challenge. But you had two to three million people on the border of Moab. And they saw the devastation of the kings, and they had heard 40 years before about the devastation of the greatest nation on earth, the nation of Egypt. And but God had no intention of Israel bothering the Moabites at all. The people of Israel were not going to take their food. They were not going to take their cattle. God was providing for them. He was continuing to provide manna for them, and he provided manna for them until they crossed over Jordan. And it was only as they crossed over Jordan that God stopped the manna. What did Balak do? As I said, he contacted the greatest curser in the world and invited him to come down and curse Israel. Before we actually get into Numbers, let's go to Psalm 35. Psalm 35 and begin in verse 1. It's interesting what this says, and you'll see as we go through this that it relates to Israel and Moab and Balaam. Here it says, "Plead my cause, O Lord, with those who strive with me." This is Psalm 35, verse 1. So plead my cause, O Lord, with those who strive with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler, and stand up for my help. Also draw out the spear, and stop those who pursue me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. And you know, sometimes we are in a situation where we need God to stand up for us. And David is making this plea that God would stand up for him. He says in verse 4, "Let those be put to shame and brought to dishonor who seek after my life. Let those be turned back and brought to confusion who plot my hurt." What's Balak doing? You see this, you know, Balak is plotting the destruction and downfall of Israel by using Balaam to curse them. He's plotting this. And I don't think Israel knew what was going on exactly. They did not know what was up. It says, "Let them be chaff before the wind. Let the angel of the Lord chase them. Let their way be dark and slippery, and let the angel of the Lord pursue them. For without cause they have hidden their net for me in a pit, which they dug without cause for my life." So they're basically setting up a trap for Israel. They want Israel to fall into the trap. And Israel is innocent. Israel was told not to bother Moab, to leave them alone, to go ahead and go through their territory, cross over the Jordan, and leave Moab alone. But out of fear, Balak is plotting their destruction. It says in verse 8, "Let destruction come upon him unexpectedly, and let his net that he has hidden catch himself into that very destruction, let him fall." So Balaam was going to set a net for Israel. And he ended up, as we'll see, falling into the pit himself. And there's a parallel in the New Testament to this. In John chapter 15, verse 25, Christ quoted from the Old Testament where it said, "They hated me without a cause." Why did they hate Jesus Christ? Did they have a legitimate ground for hating Jesus Christ? They didn't. They hated me without a cause. And this laying of a trap for the righteous is something that we as Christians have to deal with as well. We have to deal with it. It's part of life. Sometimes it's obvious somebody's out to get you, and sometimes it's not. But you can trust that God is aware of what's going on in your situation. Israel didn't know what was going on. They didn't know what was being plotted against them. They were unaware. They only knew about it after the events that are described here. You know, and you have to realize, if you're a Christian and you're trying to live God's way of life, you're putting it into practice every day the best that you can, one of the outcomes that is certain is that you will be persecuted. Isn't that what it says in the Beatitudes? It says, you will be persecuted in some way. I'm not talking, you know, they may not be burning you at the stake or anything like that. But you'll face some hostility and difficulty. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not obvious. You know, sometimes you can be if you have God's Spirit and you go around somebody that doesn't have God's Spirit, sometimes this person that you have never met before, but you come into contact with them, they're immediately hostile. And you think, what's up with this? Sometimes it's a matter of carnality is very strong in that person, and you're having God's Spirit, they react to that. And they're antagonistic to it, and you'll be able to know. You know, you haven't done anything to them, you never met them, but you can tell there's some hostility there. And sometimes because you practice God's way of life, you'll be persecuted. They don't understand it, they don't agree with it, and those are things we have to deal with as God's people. And as I said, sometimes we don't see it. But the good thing that we've seen here in Psalm 35 is God does see it. God's aware of those situations, and God will stand up for you. God's there. God will stand up for you. God will intervene on your behalf as He did for Israel. And you can count on that. And I think that's a very encouraging thing, that God sees things we don't. God steps into situations we are not aware of. But they're actually dangerous situations. And He said, you know what? I know what's going on here, and I'm going to watch out for you. So as we walk with God, we can trust that He's involved in our lives. As you look at Balaam, Balaam is being drawn into this by the Balak, the king of Moab. And Balaam was a priest diviner. And basically, he was a type of person that was a devotee of every god. He believed he could work with any god. He could curse for any god. He was tolerant of all religions. Hey, if you want me to work for you, I'll be happy to. You know, there are people that are ministers that they'll minister for anybody. What do you want me to preach? And they'll preach it. And that's their decision, but that's not what God expects us to do. You are a representative of God, and you are to preach the truth, not preach what the congregation wants to hear. So he was tolerant of all religions. He was willing to take from here and there, and whatever you wanted him to do, he was willing to do it. He was internationally known. He lived a long way from Moab, but Moab was aware of him. Now, somebody said that Balaam was the pope of his time, which I'm not sure whether that's true, maybe, but he was definitely, in all probability, being up in that area he was probably exposed to not only Abraham and Isaac and their religion, but also the Babylonian mystery religion. And we saw that Balaam, knowing Balak's position, negotiated pretty doggedly. He wanted to make the best deal that he possibly could, because he was interested in a big payday. He was interested in, hey, he cursed this whole group of 2 or 3 million people, and look how devastated they were. That's just going to give him more prestige. It's going to make him more renowned, and people will seek him out. So one of the main things we've learned about Balaam's character is that he was greedy. He was greedy, and he was willing to get ahead at any cost. And basically his view was, if it's good for Balaam, then it's good, and that's the path I'm going to go down. Let's go to 2 Peter. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 2 and look at verse 15. As we saw last time, people were aware, 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 15 and 16, the apostle gives a good summary of Balaam and false teachers. And let's look in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. It says, they have forsaken the right way, and gone astray. So these false teachers, they've forsaken the right way, that is God's way, and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of righteousness, unrighteousness. He loved the wages of unrighteousness. And unrighteousness is sin. He loved the wages of sin. It didn't bother him to sin because that's he was going to be paid. And that's what was important. So it says in verse 16, but he was rebuked for his iniquity. So rebuked for his sin. A dumb donkey speaking with a man's voice restrained the madness of the prophet. These are wells without water, clouds carried by a tempest for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. So he was rebuked for his iniquity, and he's said to be mad, the madness of the prophet. There is nothing more insane or mad than to deliberately go against God. Like the Bible says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. There is nothing more foolish than that. So let's, one of the things that, let's go back to Matthew chapter 22, verse 18. And this is a statement that's repeated throughout what God is telling Balaam. Numbers 22, verse 18. It says, then Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. So God put a limit on it. He said, I can't do more and I can't do less. God's put a limit on me. And God repeats this statement throughout the rest of chapter 22. He repeats it in chapter 23 and in chapter 24. God repeatedly warns him, don't go beyond the limit. Don't go beyond what I tell you to do. But you know, Balaam fought God at every turn. He wanted the gold, he wanted the honor, he wanted the reputation that he would gain from cursing Israel. So he was looking for a way to finagle cursing Israel, whatever he had to do to achieve that objective where he would get this big payday. That was most important to him. So this brings out a major flaw, a flaw that is common to the world, and it's this flaw, that the end justifies the means. The end justifies the means. And sometimes people say, I want this so badly. I want this so badly. That's called covetousness. I covet this so much that I'm willing to put God in a secondary position. I'm willing to misuse his name. I am willing to break the Sabbath. I'm willing to lie, to steal, or do whatever it may be in order to get what I want. So we may not use those words, but the end justifying the means is a dangerous path to tread. And Balaam basically took that position. If it's good for me, I'm going to do what I have to do to get what I want. So he was willing to do anything to get his way. And as you look at the story, it doesn't come out so clearly. You've got to read through the story and put some things together from different parts of the Bible. But you can see that Peter has said he was loved the wages of unrighteousness. Now let's go to look in chapter 22 in verse 20. So we're going to look at Balaam's donkey here for a bit. And you may think that's just a kid's story. It really doesn't have much significance. But as you'll see, there's more significance to it than you might think. So Numbers chapter 22, beginning in verse 20, begins talking about Balaam's donkey. So let's begin in verse 20, just to set the stage here. It says there, and God came to Balaam at night and said to him, if the men come to you to call you, rise and go with them. But only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do. So there's an if statement here. It says, if the men come to call you, rise and go with them. All right? That's critical to think about. Because then we come down to verse 21, and it says, "So Balaam rose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the princes of Moab." So the question is, did the princes of Moab come to Balak and ask him, or Balaam, and ask him to go with them? It doesn't say that. So he saddled his donkey and he went with them. And you notice the next thing in verse 22, it says, "Then God's anger was aroused because he went." Well, didn't he tell him to go? He didn't. He said, "If they come to you and they ask you to go with them, then go." But they didn't come back. Balaam, it's like, okay, go with them. And that's all he heard. And so he saddled up his donkey and down the road they went. And God's anger was aroused because he went. So God was very angry with him. He was very angry with him. And it's interesting what takes place here. It says, "And the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. And he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him." So God is angry with him, and the reason he was angry with him is because he didn't do what he asked him to do. If they come and ask you to go, then go with them. They didn't come and ask him, but he was so bound and determined to go, he went anyway. So he went with them, and then God was angry. And God stood against him as an adversary. And if you look at the word in the Hebrew, the word is Satan. God is not Satan, but he was an adversary in this particular case. He was his adversary, his enemy, because of his unwillingness to do what God told him to do. So there's God standing in the way. And he's unhappy with Balaam. And so Balaam is bound and determined to do what he wanted to do. So in verse 23, "Now the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with with his drawn sword in his hand, and the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. So Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back onto the road." So Balaam says, "What's wrong with you?" and hits the donkey. And I'm sure he hit him pretty hard. I know that my uncle used to hit his cows and horses, and when he hit them pretty hard. So they would step on him, or they would kick him, or they would do something that made him angry, so he would hit him pretty hard. I thought, wow. But they took it that, what, you know, cows and horses, they're big, they can take it, but I'm sure they were unhappy about it. So he hits his donkey, and he turns him back in the way. And the thing is, Balaam doesn't see God in this at all. Balaam doesn't see God in this at all. But it's interesting, the donkey did see God. I mean, the donkey was pretty smart. There's this being standing in the way, and he's got this sharp sword. Maybe we need to move away from this being. And that's exactly what the donkey was trying to do. He was trying to live by Proverbs chapter 4, verse 14 and 15, where it says, "Do not enter the path of the wicked, but turn away from it and pass on." That's what Balaam should have done. Balaam never should have gone in the first place, but Balaam wanted what Balaam wanted. And he could not see God in this at all. So he turns the donkey back onto the road, going where he wants the donkey to go. Verse 25, "Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards, with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed Balaam's foot against the wall, so he struck her again." So the angel of the Lord stood once again in the narrow path between the vineyards, and he hadn't stopped him on the first attempt, so he seeks to stop him, makes a second attempt to turn him around. Basically, you've got a vineyard on one side and a vineyard on another, and God boxes him in. So the donkey, he's trying to push get the donkey to go forward, and the donkey turns away and crushes his foot against the wall. And Balaam again, he doesn't see God involved in this at all. And he again strikes the donkey. His injury doesn't make him stop and say, hey, wait a minute, something strange is going on here. He doesn't have the vision to see it. God's trying to get his attention, but he's not seeing it at all. So he takes all of his pain and his rage out on the innocent donkey. Let's go to keep your finger there in Numbers and turn over to Psalm 141. Psalm 141. And as we read verses 8 through 10, think of the donkey. Psalm 141, verses 8 through 10. It says, but my eyes are upon you, O God, the Lord. In you I take refuge. The donkey's a dumb beast, but the donkey had this perspective. My eyes are upon you, O God, the Lord. He saw God, and he recognized danger. Do not leave my soul destitute. Keep me from the snares they have laid for me and from the traps of the workers of iniquity. Let the wicked fall into their own nets while I escape safely. So the donkey who saw God could avoid the trap and escape if it weren't for Balaam, who was controlling the donkey. So the donkey's trying to get out of the way. And the donkey's quite interesting here. If we look at the donkey in terms of you and me, then we can see certain things that come out. Verses 26 and 27 of Numbers chapter 22, it says, then the angel of the Lord went further. So God went a little further down the road, went further and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. So the donkey turns out into the field. Then he's between the vineyards, which is more narrow, and he turns into the wall. And then he's in a place where he can't turn at all. You can only go forward or back. That's the only way that you can move, forward or back. And so he couldn't turn either to the right or the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam's anger was aroused and he struck the donkey with his staff. So the donkey can't go forward. It can only back up, and Balaam's trying to urge the donkey on, so the donkey just falls down. Nothing else he can do, so he, again, hits the donkey. And as you think about this, as God was dealing with Balaam, God deals with us in the same way, you might think of it. God, as he's dealing with us, puts us in a wide place, and he allows us to make our decisions. We can make our own decisions and our own choices. And if we do that, it soon becomes apparent what path we're taking. Then the way begins to narrow. If we're not on the right path, it begins to narrow, especially if God sees us going in the right direction. And if he catches us in a place where we can turn around, and he'll give us the opportunity to make a right decision. God sees us going in the wrong direction, and God will try to get us to turn. So sometimes you might think about Balaam and the donkey in your own life. When things aren't going the way that they should, and it seems like you're beating your head against the wall, maybe you are. And maybe you need to reconsider, maybe this is not the path that I need to be going down. Why am I having these difficulties? Is it because God is inhibiting my going forward? If we don't do what he wants us to do, then he'll go a little further down the path a little bit later on in our life, and to catch us in a place where the answer is obvious. And we can't do anything except stop and say, God help me. Sometimes it comes, you're like the donkey, you just fall to your knees there because there is no way to go. And the donkey doesn't know what to do. And we've gone the wrong way and we have to turn to God and ask for the wisdom to get out of the situation. And that's what God is doing with Balaam. He gets him to the point where there's only plunging on to destruction on the one hand, or to back up and turn around and go back in the opposite direction. And the donkey simply lies down. That's all she can do because she can't follow the path that Balaam wants her to go down, because there's the angel of the Lord standing in the way. You might think about this in terms of Proverbs chapter 22, verse 3. Proverbs 22, verse 3 says, "A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." So who do you think the prudent being is in this situation? And it's not Balaam. The donkey's prudent, because the donkey saw the danger and tried to get out of the way. Balaam, he's just pushing on, pushing ahead. Balaam is the simple man here, lacking wisdom. As a last resort, God in his mercy gives Balaam one more chance to turn it around. And you can see God is very merciful to try to turn Balaam around. Let's go down to verse 28 in Numbers 22. There it says, "Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, 'What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?'" Now, would any of you be surprised if your donkey spoke to you? Your dog, your cat? I think hopefully we would be surprised. We need to talk if this is happening regularly. You know, there's a problem there. But God allowed the donkey to talk directly to Balaam. He opened the mouth of the donkey and he said, "You know, why have you done this? You know, you've hit me these three times." And verse 29, "And Balaam said to the donkey, 'Because you have abused me, I wish you there were a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you.'" So Balaam, you know, the donkey says, "When have I done this before?" And, you know, Balaam's having a conversation with the donkey. So anyway, he's talking to the donkey and, you know, he said, basically, "If I had a sword, it would be over for you." And then verse 30, "So the donkey said to Balaam, 'Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden? Ever since I became yours to this day, was I ever disposed to do this to you?' And Balaam says, 'No, I've never known you to act like this.'" But Balaam is completely blind. He cannot see that there's something going on here and it's bigger than what he can see with his eyes. He doesn't see God involved here at all. He has no clue about what's taking place. All he's thinking about is, "Man, I can't wait till I get them down there where the Israelites and Moab, and I can pick up all this money, and oh, it's going to be great." And that's all he thinks about. That's all he considers. And he is spiritually blind. He can't see God. God's not in the picture at all. And the reason is because Balaam was totally selfish. And you have to think about, if we can be just like this, we can want something so badly that we're willing to pursue it regardless. We think, "This is what I want, and this is going to make me happy, or this is going to fulfill me, or this is going to work out for me in some way." And we can be just like Balaam if we're not careful. And Balaam's story is not just a child's story. It's a story for all of us, for us to heed and don't follow the path of Balaam. So Balaam was, he was selfish, he was materialistic, and he couldn't see beyond that. And in all probability, it talks about him being a soothsayer. And that means he's involved with evil spirits and augury and enchanting. And as you look at Balaam, Balaam may have come across as a spiritual person, you know, but he wasn't. He wasn't. You know, people say he's so spiritual or she's so spiritual. What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. If a person is spiritual, they're manifesting that they are a spiritual individual because they are following God's commandments. They are yielding to God, responding to God. Balaam was basically a thoroughly evil person. And the donkey was more spiritual than Balaam. And, you know, Balaam may have had some knowledge of God, but it didn't do him much good. Because was he responsive to God? Here you have the donkey that's more responsive to God than Balaam. So none of this, none of the knowledge that Balaam may have had did him any good. He had talked to God. God had spoken to him in a dream. That didn't faze him at all. God talked back to him. God was doing all these things in his life. And he was thoroughly blind to all of it. Blind to it. And God's saying, "Wake up, Balaam, I'm here. Can't you see me?" And Balaam couldn't see it. So let's look at some other people that were blind, because it relates to what we're looking at here. Let's go to Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3. And let's look at verses 17 through 19. Revelation chapter 3, beginning in verse 17. "Because you say, 'I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing.'" As you think about Balaam, I would venture to say that was probably his mindset. That he felt he was rich, that he was in need of nothing, that that he was, you know, he considered himself to be rich. He didn't need anything. And it goes on to say there in verse 17, "And do not know." You don't know your condition. And if we should remember that Balaam had knowledge of some things that were worthless to him, so he might as well not have known. You know, if the God of the universe talks to you and you don't follow what the God of the universe tells you, what good is it doing you? And you do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. You know, his condition, he was in a lot worse condition than he considered himself to be. And so God gives him some advice. He says, "I counsel you to buy from me gold." And what did Balaam want? Balaam wanted the gold. He wanted it badly. And he was willing to do anything to get it. He wanted the gold from Balak. But God says, "Buy gold from me." Balak's offering you gold, but it's of in comparison to the spiritual riches, of no value. I'm offering you something that's of greater value. Now remember, Balaam wanted the gold, but he didn't want to God's gold. He wanted the gold from Balak. And God offered him the gold refined in the fire. And God was putting Balaam through some trials, some fire. "That you may be rich, and white garments, that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed. And anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see." And that's what Balaam needed. He needed the eye salve because he could not see. And God was, it says, "As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore be zealous and repent." Balaam couldn't see. He was blind. As you look at Numbers 22, it's a parable of what God is willing to do to get our attention. What God is willing to do to make us turn so that we buy the gold refined in the fire. We get the proper white garments where our eyes are anointed so that we can see. He's trying to get us to repent. He's chastening us at times in order to get us to turn around. And he wanted Balaam basically to back that donkey up and turn around and go back in the direction that he had come. And as you look at the Laodicean, he has similar problems to Balaam. He's blind to God at work in his life. He's blind to God at work in his life and the lives of others. Why? Why? Because he's so focused on everything but God and what he wants and how he wants to get it and what acquiring what he wants is going to do him good. That was his focus. Christ's advice to the Laodicean is to receive the eye salve from God in order that you can see clearly. So remember what Peter said the doctrine of Balaam is. He loved the wages of unrighteousness. Balaam took advantage of sin and sinful practices to get ahead. And once something that's interesting here in chapter 23, in Numbers chapter 23, verse 10, it says, "Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his." Basically, he wanted to live the way that he wanted, and on his deathbed, make the commitment to God. And we've all heard of deathbed repentances. We've all heard of those. Can you repent on your deathbed and be assured of salvation? Absolutely not. And there are people that say, you know what? I'm going to live it to the hilt. And when I'm on the deathbed, I'm going to kick it in and repent and say, God, I'm ready. But that's not going to happen. I imagine a lot of people that have had that mindset are going to come up in the resurrection. Oops, this didn't work out like I thought it was going to. So, that was his mindset. He wanted as he said, let me die the death of the righteous and let my end be like his. Because the righteous is going to inherit salvation. But he didn't want to live a righteous life. So he wanted all the benefits, but he didn't want to do it. So it's going to, you know, as you think about it, for us to reap the benefits, we have to put in the time. And it takes a lifetime. It takes a lifetime for us to learn and to grow and to be ready for the kingdom. God is trying to get his attention. Let's go to Psalm 23. And you would think, or not Psalm 23, but Numbers 22 once again in verse 31. Numbers 22, verse 31. So God's trying to get his attention here. So God still isn't through. God's going to continue to try to get his attention. Numbers 22, verse 31. It says, "Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes." So the donkey's seen the angel. Balaam hasn't seen it. Balaam doesn't get it. So he opened the Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed his head and fell flat on his face. So he recognized, oops, this being is there with that outstretched sword, and he could kill me instantly. And at that point, he was quite aware of what was going on. Verse 32, "And the angel of the Lord said to him, 'Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to stand against you. I've come out to stand against you because your way is perverse before me.'" So God's come out as his adversary and is standing against him. And you notice he asks, "Why have you struck the donkey three times?" He's concerned about the donkey. And here was Balaam, who had pretensions of being a good person, but who was thoroughly evil, taking it out on the righteous. So God has concern for the creature. And God has come out to stand against him because he says, "Your way is perverse before me." So what does that word perverse mean? Perverse is a way that it can be translated, but there are other ways that it could be translated that are actually better translations. It means to precipitate, to be precipitant, to push headlong, to drive recklessly. God said, the path that you're on is basically reckless. It's headlong. It's precipitous. You're driving 90 miles an hour in the wrong direction, in a destructive direction. On the other hand, consider the donkey. The donkey was responding to God and seeking to turn in the right direction, to go away from the danger. But Balaam didn't see it. And as you think about the The donkey is persecuted for her obedience, and the donkey in her meekness doesn't retaliate. She doesn't bite Balaam or kick Balaam or anything like that. And God said that it was for her sake that he had not carried out his judgment on Balaam, for the donkey's sake. And you might think about Revelation chapter 7. Let's turn back there. Revelation chapter 7. As you think about what is to come. Revelation chapter 7. As the day of the Lord is about to unfold, it tells us in verses 2 through 4, the trumpets are about to sound and the day of the Lord is to begin. It says in verse 2, "Then I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, 'Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads.' And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel were sealed." So before the day of the Lord begins, it says that the servants of God are going to be sealed. That point's also made in Ezekiel chapter 9, where it talks about the man with the writing horn going through the midst of the city with an ink pen, and he marks those who are gods on their forehead. And then right behind him come the slayers with their swords. So this donkey is a very important character. And, what takes place here is very sad. In verse chapter 22, verse 34, it says, "And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, 'I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me.' He admits that he was wrong, but he blames his own blindness. 'I didn't see.' And he was terrified, but he didn't beseech God for mercy. And he didn't confess that he had sinned. 'I didn't see you. I'm just a poor, ignorant person.' And his confession here is less than heartfelt. Then he says in verse 34, Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back." If it displeases you, he was blind. If I have to turn back, I'll turn back. And he really didn't understand where God was coming from. Verse 35, "Then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, 'Go with the men, but only the word I speak to you that you shall speak.' So Balaam went with the princes." And God did not allow Balaam to speak against Israel, although he wanted to. He could not directly curse them. But what did Balaam do? Balaam weaseled his way to a solution. He said, "You know what? I cannot directly curse Israel. God will not allow it. In fact, I pronounced one blessing after another on them. But you know how we can get them? He's still laying a trap for them. We'll lead them to sin. We'll entice them into sin. And then God will curse them." And that's exactly what they did. We're told about that in Numbers 25, where it talks about Israel becoming involved in the gods of Moab and with the women in fornication and adultery. And God killed 24,000 of them. As you think about Balaam, he lived by the letter of the law. But there was no "thus saith the Lord" against enticing Israel to sin. God didn't tell him directly not to do that, but he figured it out and gave Balak that plan. And it talks about the wicked being killed. Well, Balaam was killed. You go to Joshua chapter 13, verses 21 and 22. It talks about his being killed. God said he would kill him, and he did. And so you can look at Balaam. Balaam was an evil individual. And in one sense, he's a type of what is to come as the end of the age comes, an individual who wants what he wants so much that he's willing to... Is the individual at the end of the age, is he going to seek to destroy the people of God? Absolutely. So... That some of the qualities that we see here with Balaam are going to be manifested in that individual. So God put quite a bit in the scriptures about Balaam. Hopefully this gives you better insight into that. And hopefully it'll be a value. Some of the lessons that we learned here will be of value in your life as you go forward.